You're listening to KUNV 91.5, and this is Neon Eden. I'm your host, J. Patrick Kulikin. You can read my columns in the Las Vegas Sun and Las Vegas Weekly. My co-host, as always, Tovin Lepan, Las Vegas Sun reporter. Our guest today is Nancy Menzel, professor of nursing at UNLV and a member of the Southern Nevada District Board of Health. The Board of Health is the governing body of the Southern Nevada Health District, which is the region's $71 million public health agency. Be sure to read my column on Professor Menzel's departure from the board. She says she's leaving the board in frustration as board and local politics overwhelm the region's pressing public health problems. Professor Menzel, thanks for being here.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me. I appreciate this opportunity to expand on your column.
Let's discuss, just first, tell us why you're leaving the board after just a single term. I gather that it's you're leaving in with some frustration.
Well, members at large are usually two physicians, a nurse, and somebody representing environmental health. And every 2 years, there's another call for at-large members. So it isn't exactly that I resigned. I just didn't reapply for another term. There was some surprise from Tim Jones, the chair, that I hadn't reapplied. And I expressed my dissatisfaction with the ineffectiveness of the board for not reapplying.
Tell us how it was ineffective, in your view.
Well, there's an organization called the National Association of Local Boards of Health, and it is guidance to local boards of health as to how they should function. And they should be forward-looking, setting policies based on the most pressing needs of the region, instead of backward-looking, trying to micromanage the affairs of the district. We're quite advanced in this area in that we don't have seven different health boards. We've got all of the municipalities and governing bodies in one board, which is excellent. However, the board has not really focused on improving the health of the community. I believe it just focuses on how the district is managed, what policies it has in place, whether certain rules have been followed, and it spends a lot of time micromanaging rather than looking forward.
I mean, in fairness to the board, I mean, it is its job is to be a kind of governing body for the district. But in your view, this would be like a board of directors for a corporation that was trying to tell the company how much their product should sell for and so forth.
That sort of thing, yes. The chief health officer is the executive secretary of the board, and it's through the executive secretary or the chief health officer that the board should direct, policy. But it should not be down to the level of calling individual employees up and critiquing their performance.
And you've seen some of that.
Yes, and I've seen some rudeness toward employees and behavior that I didn't really expect from a governing board.
We should also note that the board has had is in a very awkward situation with Clark County because its funding comes through property taxes, which comes from the county, but it is still quasi-independent. Tell us about some of that conflict.
Well, when I came on the board 2 years ago, I was told that the county several years ago had directed the board, had directed the Southern Nevada Health District to set aside some money for building fund because it was obvious that they'd outgrown their building and it had outlived its safety and usefulness. But somewhere in the middle of my term, the county decided that the district had no right to own property, and therefore its building fund was illegal, and that it read the statute that required a certain number of cents of the property tax to be allocated to it, that the county could adjust that and allocate anywhere from 0 cents to 3.5 cents. And so last year the county did not allocate it what the state statute had said it should. So the Board of Health was required or decided to sue the county, one, on the issue of owning property, and two, on how much the statute really meant to give each year from the property taxes.
And in the meantime, with all of this conflict, Southern Nevada has really significant public health challenges.
Yes.
Why don't you talk, we're going to have a good discussion about that, I think. Let's discuss broadly the state of public health in Southern Nevada.
Well, we spend the least of any state on public health, and it shows. And when I moved here in 2006, I was stunned to see all of the development that had occurred with very little thought to the built environment. Much of public health philosophy has moved away from trying to educate people on individual behavior change. They now go to
anti-smoking billboards and so forth.
Right. And stop smoking classes. Uh-huh. It goes to policy changes such as the Nevada Clean Indoor Air Act.
Uh-huh.
And to promote exercise instead of trying to make people drive 20 minutes to a gym, which is not feasible for many people, the focus is on providing sidewalks so people can not only walk but socialize with their neighbors, which builds social capital.
Uh-huh.
But in the area...
So that's when you're talking about the built environment.
The built environment, right. Yes. And it's several things besides sidewalks. It also allows for bicycle paths, safe routes to school, something called complete streets, which allows more than cars to use streets safely, which we really don't have here. And there hasn't been a lot of top-down control over public health issues.
Okay. That's just one area, it seems to me. I mean, if you look at where do we rank in, compared to other regions as far as our public health statistics?
Well, it depends on which, rater you look at. I had sent you some statistics. But there's also the Kaiser Foundation also puts out statistics. And typically, if there's a bad list, we're at the top of it. And if there's a good list, we're at the bottom of it. And part of the issue is, we say we have a population of 1.9 million, but probably on any particular day, it's 2.5 to 3 million with all of our visitors. And so consequently, we suffer some bad statistics in terms of sexually transmitted diseases. And although prostitution...
There are sexually transmitted diseases on the Las Vegas Strip?
Well, we have reportable diseases that you can look up, and we have an epidemic of chlamydia. In fact, there's a public health term called endemic, which means a disease that is here at a steady state, and chlamydia is one of them. We have...
Does this mean it would be just... That just means it would be very difficult to eradicate?
No, it just means that, for instance, if you go to Nigeria, polio is endemic there, so you would have to take precautions because you might get it.
Mm-hmm.
Here we have chlamydia, so if you're a visitor or resident, you should take precautions in having sex because you're at high risk of getting chlamydia. We also have...
Thanks for that.
We also have syphilis, and unfortunately we also have prenatal syphilis, so that the child congenital syphilis is born with syphilis, which should be a never event in our society because we lack prenatal care and lack screening.
Is Vegas unique in having those STDs as endemic in the area?
There are other counties that have endemic sexually transmitted diseases, but for a large metropolitan area, we haven't done a good job. And part of it is the uncontrolled prostitution in Las Vegas.
So that's one area where clearly we're at a disadvantage because of the tourists. Now, does our tourism industry, it would seem to me that this would create some other public health problems insofar as the 24/7 kind of lifestyle. It must make it difficult for people who are working the service jobs, the night shift. It's tough to be healthy.
Yes. We have a natural lab here for stress problems caused by disruptions in circadian rhythm. People who work a minimum wage job, for instance, overnight, and then have to work a second minimum wage job so that they're more depressed and stressed. So we do have this much more so than other areas which are not 24-hour towns.
Uh-huh. And talk about the effect of stress on the body. I mean, some listeners might say, well, if you need to work hard to get by, then so be it.
Well, stress produces the fight or flight response, and you get a release of cortisol, and that stresses the heart and raises blood pressure, can cause obesity. When these people go to bed, their blood pressure doesn't return to a lower level, as low as yours might, or someone less stressed, so that we have more heart disease and obesity and diabetes. So stress is a very negative, physiologically based disorder.
Okay. Another disadvantage we have, it would seem, with respect to public health is in smoking cessation. Because so many people are working in a environment where they're smoking, which might encourage them to smoke, and then they also are subject to secondhand smoke.
Yes, I'm an occupational health nurse by basic education, and, you know, OSHA requires an employer to provide a safe and healthful workplace, but they've really steered clear of the smoking issue. They did a...
Too controversial?
Well, yes, you know...
Taking on the tobacco lobby.
Right. So they did a health hazard evaluation, NIOSH did, the National Institute of Occupational Safety and Health, up in several of the casinos, and they did find high levels of cotinine in the workers there, which can lead to respiratory and other cancers. In fact, in Nevada, our three leading causes of death are not heart disease, cancer, and stroke. They're heart disease, cancer, and upper respiratory diseases.
So, by your deduction, secondhand smoke is killing people here.
Yes, and you know, I can understand someone who wants to smoke. I smoked myself as a young woman, but when I got pregnant, I decided it wasn't good, and I stopped. But people, tobacco is legal. People have a right to smoke, but they really don't have a right to blow it in a dealer's face while they're playing poker. But
On this area, we have moved backward.
Yes, we have.
Okay, tell us how.
Well, the we did, by some dint of effort, pass the Nevada Clean Indoor Act, which prohibited smoking in most public places except for casinos. So the taverns pushed back, taverns and bars, and they were able to get exemptions passed in the last state legislature. So they can now allow smoking in those places.
Can you? Are there any other states that, I mean, it seems like the movement in, on this issue is all in one direction across the country.
I think we're the last state that allows smoking in casinos. I might be wrong about that, but the movement is definitely towards non-smoking casinos.
Even casinos, okay. Yeah, I think that there's lots of smoking in casinos, depending on where you are. So let's move on. It just never ends. Teen pregnancy, high rates of teen pregnancy here. Although this is, as you noted, this is one area where the board did set new policy to try to deal with this. We have traditionally one of the highest teen pregnancy rates in the country.
Yes, it is difficult to get a handle on that because the state has not published any vital statistics since 2004. Which on any health issue. So it makes it difficult for us in the health district or academia to get federal grants because we can't prove need. But the Guttmacher Institute, I believe, publishes statistics on teen pregnancy, and we're always vying with New Mexico for, you know, high teen pregnancy rates. And I have friends who are school nurses who say they have, you know, children in middle school who are pregnant. And it's an issue because then it dooms both parent and child to a life of poverty because they don't finish their education. And we in our schools do not allow sex education. And that's one of the issues that I wish the board would have gone further with their stance. We don't like teen pregnancy and we're against it. Fine. Well, what's the plan to prevent it? Mm-hmm. Could we allow some sex education in the schools?
And in talking to the district, they did tell me about a couple innovative programs they've come up with respect to teen pregnancy and young mothers. Maybe you can tell us about that.
The Nurse Family Partnership started about 15 or 20 years ago with a Dr. Olds, in Denver, and he puts a registered nurse, this program doesn't work with ancillary workers like nurses' aides, to work with an at-risk mother. I think your article mentioned people who were known to the juvenile justice system or at risk in some way, to work with that mother through pregnancy and birth and follows the child and mother for 2 years. And they're able to succeed in preventing premature delivery, low birth weight. They work with a parent to stay off drugs and to teach positive parenting. And that reduces the risk that this child will be put up for foster care or be abused, and is extremely cost-effective.
And it's cost-effective because it sounds expensive. It's cost-effective because childhood trauma, if it does indeed prevent childhood trauma, would that leads to what problems down the road?
Well, children who are abused, can be taken away from the mother, but they often wind up committing criminal acts later. And so we save money in jail costs, prison costs. I think I sent you some statistics that shows we spend more in Nevada per prisoner than we do to educate a child each year. Mm-hmm. So that saves the money there. Plus, we work with the mother to prevent future pregnancies until they are in a stable place. So you don't have the problem of 5 or 6 pregnancies closely spaced. Preterm births can lead to all sorts of expenses in the hospital. A premature baby,
which is usually going to be
Medicaid or unreimbursed, could be $150,000 to $200,000.
But the hospital has to eat and then pass on to paying customers.
And so they have a 96% rate of term birth, which is pretty astounding.
I mean, what is the? How does that compare to some middle class suburban rate of term birth?
Well, middle-class suburbs, they typically get prenatal care and are able to, deliver near their term and full birth weight babies. The problem comes with poverty and certain racial groups. You have an extremely high low birth weight rate. And so this program, and I went to the graduation and watched the mothers from the first cohort. It was quite encouraging.
When was that?
It was about a year ago. And the mothers were able to discipline their children properly when they acted up. Two-year-olds trying to sit still for half an hour. They were, distracted, given off to some other caregiver rather than what I witnessed in the lobby of the health district one day. A mother looked like a 9-month-old child up on the counter while she tried to do something, and the child misbehaved in some way, and the mother slapped the baby across the face.
The program sounds great, but I mean, should be mentioned, right, that this isn't doing anything to prevent the teens from getting pregnant in the first place,
right?
It's helping them once they do get pregnant. And so are there other programs in place to do on more the preventative side of?
Well, from what I understand is that there, although the mechanics of sexual behavior are taught in the schools separately to girls and boys, people are prohibited from, or nurses are prohibited from talking about birth control, and Planned Parenthood is not allowed on the grounds. And when there was a Nevada Health Center's clinic up on a school property, it treated all sorts of people in North Las Vegas, but they were prohibited from providing any women's services there because it was on the school grounds. And, that's just backwards.
Okay. Another public health problem here in Southern Nevada, suicide.
Yes, we have a very high suicide rate, particularly among the elderly. Mm-hmm. And I had the coroner run some statistics for me about 2 years ago on the most common manner of death, and it was firearms, far and away any other method.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an issue.
Do we have any thoughts about why that might be?
Well, I don't have any firm evidence, but it seems that people may move out here for low taxes, to be near a Air Force base if they're vets, and they leave behind their support systems, their families. They might develop a drinking problem, get in debt with gambling, but I have no real evidence for that. We don't have much social capital here in that there's...
Tell us what you mean by that.
Well, a social capital is getting to know your neighbor and having a sense of community. You know, when I came home, when I moved here, I drove into my garage and shut the door. All of the garages face the street and the living is out back. I've been there 6 years and I really just know three of my neighbors. We've had a lot of people, short sales and foreclosures, a lot of people rent and move out in the middle of the night and a lot of turnover. So I really don't have a good sense of my neighbors.
Mm-hmm. And from what I've read, that kind of social isolation, it can actually be pretty serious health condition.
Well, it can lead to depression, uh-huh. And that's why having sidewalks that promote walking and mingling with your neighbors have been proven to be effective not only against obesity but also against depression.
Uh-huh. And I imagine that would be especially true of the elderly.
Yes.
Okay. Tell us why, I mean, listeners might ask themselves, or might be saying to themselves, well, these are someone else's problems. These other people have these health problems. I'm healthy. So why should we care? I mean, other than just because it's the humanitarian thing to do, why should we care? Why is it an important public policy issue that we promote better public health?
Well, one thing you didn't mention was that we have a high rate of uninsured people. It goes along with the unemployment rate, but a lot of employers no longer offer health insurance. And so how it affects me financially is that these people wait until they're extremely sick and then show up in the UMC emergency room when they need dialysis or, you know, they're in heart failure. It's extremely expensive to treat them. And then the money is taken from my property taxes to pay for this care, and it's taken from areas that might benefit me, like more parks. So it costs me financially. And also, for a city to be sustainable, its workforce has to be healthy. And if our workers aren't healthy, then we can't be productive. And I know the governor wants us to diversify. And so we have to have a healthy
economically
workforce.
Diversify.
Yeah, okay. Economically diversify. And one of the things is to be a medical tourism destination.
Uh-huh.
But I think we first have to take care of the people here who are sick and prevent them from being sick.
Uh-huh. I know your specialty is occupational health. Do we have any idea of how healthy or unhealthy our workforce is?
Well, in Nevada, no, we really don't, because I used to be president of the Occupational Health Nurses Association in Nevada, and none of the casinos employ occupational health nurses because it would cause a conflict with the smoking. And so I really don't have a good sense of that. I do know that most casinos, you have to work a minimum number of hours to get the health benefits.
Uh-huh.
And during the recession, they cut those hours down so that people weren't able to access health care and they weren't able to get dental care or for their children. And, you know, there's a myth that, well, you can just be on Medicaid. But Medicaid is extremely specific as to who can be on Medicaid, and it's extremely income limited. So the lower middle class, they're not going to be eligible for Medicaid. They're just left without care.
Tell us what are a few steps that you think we ought to take that would improve public health?
Well, as I said before, one of the great strengths we have is that the Board of Health is a regional board, and it's made up primarily of representatives from the Clark County Commission, Mesquite, City of Las Vegas, Henderson, and so forth, and they have the power to go back to their jurisdictions and make sure health is a consideration in all of the policies in the county.
In zoning and planning.
In zoning and planning and in how funds are allocated to various programs, you know, put more money towards primary rather than tertiary prevention. Tertiary is just getting diapers for the incontinent versus trying to prevent someone from getting into that state.
Mm-hmm.
And so we do have that power. If the commissioners would focus more on what is their role and what are the powers of a Board of Health versus, you know, what can I get from my jurisdiction from this?
Uh-huh. All right, so that's kind of the broad view of the what the board ought to the approach it should take to its job, but what are some public health policies that we could put in place?
Well, the one I mentioned about the built environment uh-huh. would be a no-brainer.
So that would be wider sidewalks and narrower
and,
streets?
No more cul-de-sacs and bike lanes uh-huh. and reducing the speed for, you know, cars, maybe bringing things down to two lanes from four,
uh-huh.
I mean, and it's sort of traffic calming.
I was just gonna suggest maybe some more trees or shade on the
trees
street, so it's not so unbearable to walk. You know?
Right, yeah, reducing crime. Mm-hmm. But one of the policies I would like to see, or a position statement, is for the board to come out against prostitution. You know, when I've raised that, people have said, oh, well, it's illegal here. Uh-huh. Well, if it's illegal, why isn't it being enforced? We faced quite an uphill battle recruiting staff to the School of Nursing faculty because they come here and see the girls to your room signs and things like that. Uh-huh. They say, I don't want to raise my children here.
Uh-huh.
And then we don't.
I mean, in fairness to
again.
Metro, I mean, Metro would say that they are enforcing it as best they can given the resources they have.
Yes, right. Know. But I think the Board of Health should just take a position uh-huh. that we're against prostitution
uh-huh.
and the evils that it comes with, the trafficking and all of that sort of stuff.
Uh-huh.
Let's see.
Smoking cessation would be. I mean, your
yeah.
dream would be that would be an indoor smoking ban.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Like right. New York City.
That's probably, you know, not coming anytime soon to
uh-huh.
Nevada.
Right.
The health of children should be a priority versus the health of other groups. I mean, the elderly already have Medicare, and, you know, we should really favor the health of children, and we need to do more to make sure that they receive health care and
immunizations.
In immunizations, we are the lowest in terms of preschool immunizations in the country. And so, you know, we could direct the health district to pour more of its resources into that area to reduce, because up in Washington State and Oregon, they have epidemics now of whooping cough, pertussis, and that could easily happen here.
Mm-hmm.
We're just lucky that it hasn't. So there's, you know, what it really needs, we're in the process. I've been working with Emily Brown, who's a consultant to the State Health Department, in trying to conduct a community health improvement plan. And once we get the evidence on where the real problems are, that's where the policy should be directed.
Well, when you get that report back, we'd love to have you back to discuss it.
Thank you.
Professor Nancy Menzel, she's a professor of nursing at UNLV, and she is a member of the Southern Nevada District Board of Health, and we thank her for being here today. You've been listening to KUNV 91.5. This is Neon Eden. My co-host is Tovin LePan, and I'm Patrick Hooligan. Catch us next week.